Hello everyone, welcome to a really cool special edition, I don't know, episode of the Mac Show, no, the Big Show, the Big Show. See, I'm already confused. I'm the interim host, Patrice, because I think most, if not all, of the American gang is out of town right now, and they're all traveling to MacStock. So if you want to hear more about that, I will have to tune in tomorrow for the Mac Show, because today we're not talking about that. But I have, as I said, a special panel with me, because, well, there's one American and one British person, but they're not going to MacStock. So so let's start on the American side. With the cool picture in the background, Tom, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. The picture is due to our pre-show discussion about flying in airplanes. Yeah. I'm doing great.
How old is that picture?
That picture was from 1981 or 82.
Wow, older than me then. That is
a long
time.
That makes me feel so old.
Yeah, same.
So I was doing well today.
Good. You're still, I mean, you look, you must have been like five when that picture was taken.
You weren't even born.
No, right, Tom.
Well, I was young enough to be stupid and not wearing a shirt in this picture for some reason.
Okay, now you know who is who.
Yeah, I was wondering which one was Tom.
Yeah, now we know.
Well, it's from the East Bay and in the Bay Area, and East Bay gets super hot, you know, 100 degrees in the summertime.
Yeah, it was
so
definitely
a
very,
lot of sweating.
Very hot, but also very sunny from the looks of it.
Yeah. Shade was very valuable.
Yeah, I mean, anyway, there's usually not a lot of shade at the airport, like, for good reason.
trees lining the runway are probably not a good idea. Yeah.
Nope. But we have another person with a really cool background picture. It looks really relaxing. We have Ian with us. How are you doing?
Hello. I'm doing good. I'm melting because the UK is above 10 degrees.
Summer.
I mean, this summer. Well, no, actually, no, it's genuinely, it's been humid and nearly 30 today.
Oh, wow.
And tomorrow is going to be the same, and the day after is going to be the same. My little office I'll always complain about only has one thickness of wall, not very good insulation, it's cold in the winter, and like an oven in the summer. So I'm slightly melting here. Perspiring, I'm glowing, I think the word is. Being in here this week, and I've been teaching our VMCE class, our main certification track class this week. It's been fun. Happily, that starts a little bit early because it's set to European time, so that gives me a little bit of a break.
That's good.
Tomorrow, I think if it's continued to be warm, I'm going to get up and start work at 7 and then finish at a kind of vaguely civilized hour, and it won't get, because it gets hot, you know, the day, obviously, the room warms up. So I'm going to do that. But otherwise, it's fine. I'm busy. I'm now back into full teaching mode. I've got a week's, I've now got a couple of months worth of classes and stuff to manage and things. So that's all great. A bit of management. We've got a new product. We've got new product launches coming up in the next couple of months as well. So I'm involved in those. So that's fun. So yeah, all sorts going on.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, when you were talking, I was thinking about, like, you're melting. It's like ice in the sunshine, right?
Very much like that. My cat's black, and she looks like ice. It's melting. The cat's just melted. Kind of thing.
Yeah.
The poor old cat is in not a good state. Poor old cat.
Yeah, she's got to move into the fridge, probably.
Yeah, she looks for the coolest places possible.
Yeah, I mean, also because there's a lot of food there, so.
That would exactly be the reason she's there. And no other reason she's there other than food.
So
and the cat,
yes. So we have as usual, I think have we done a show last week? I don't remember. Like we definitely skipped somewhere in the last weeks because of meltdowns.
We did.
You guys did a show. I wasn't here last time.
Okay. Good. I don't remember because it's been like a little bit crazy with Jeff traveling and being busy, me traveling or being busy, and
No, I was as
concept.
well. Yeah, so
Yeah.
we've all had points where we're not made here, haven't we? So yeah, so we're
Yeah.
back again. We still there's
Oh,
still
it's
some
true.
news as well.
Yeah, exactly.
There's still
Yeah.
some IT news. I mean, that's good. There's all manner of IT news this week.
Yeah, there's definitely stuff going on. So, yeah, the first story already dropped in is Ian's story.
Well,
So go
obviously,
ahead.
I'm gonna cheat and throw my story in early.
No, this time it
I'm
wasn't cheating. I already had started to go into the news, so that was totally fine.
okay. I always have the fastest finger first. It's got good practice now. I'm going to paste in another link for the same story. It's something that popped in my news feed this week, and I hadn't really been aware of what's going on. And it's all to do with North Korea funding laptop farms around the world, and they're using them primarily to get jobs within the IT sector in various places in order to exfiltrate either information or just money to funnel back into Pyongyang's weapons program. It's fascinating, something I didn't realize was existing. This week, the reason why it's sort of come to notice is the first link in there is an article about DOJ. I've just done a ton of raids and found a whole bunch of guys building out these laptop, multiple shell companies, multiple sort of, they pose as contractors.
Yeah,
I
it's
thought
a
this was,
contractors are sometimes even employees, where they're like
yeah, completely.
they run a person through the interview section, and then basically once they get hired, they basically farm that out to like a laptop farm and work from North
Yeah.
Korea or whatever and steal whatever they
And
can.
yeah. Yeah, so
In
there's
most
tons
of
of laptops and KVMs and all sorts hooking all this madness together. And I was thinking, oh, this is just probably an America isolated problem. And
No.
well, during the Google, I found the second link that's in there, which is interesting article, which then calls back to it's from our government's Office of Financial Sanctions implementation. And it's a full detail of how it goes on and what to expect and what to look for if you're employing people and how often this is going on. This is a red warning for us here in the UK. So clearly it's not something they're just targeting the States and Silicon Valley and all of that money machine over there. It's everywhere. So that was just a fascinating thing I didn't realize was quite as prevalent as it is.
Yeah,
Well, I think
exactly.
the funny part is quite often the jobs they're getting are IT jobs, systems jobs. So these guys have quite good access to the computer systems. Let's put it that way. If you want to get into a company and you want to do it through fake employment, get into the IT group.
Yeah, once you're in there, it's you're off, aren't you? You're at the races, to be honest. If you get in within a decent large business, and you can start then to gather intel information or then become trusted, so you'll then hop further along the chain, isn't it? Because quite often it's a long game. It's not just one job and you're away. It's the long game of making yourself appear to be productive, employee in one place to move on to the next, to move on to the
Well,
next, to then
yeah,
get be trusted.
that also inserting things into whatever they're selling or
Oh yeah.
providing.
Yeah, backdoor code and stuff like that. Yeah.
For me, the question is like, what can you do to like prevent that from happening to you as a company? One
It's
thing that comes
tough.
to mind, it is tough, but one thing that comes to mind is MDM solutions. Because if you are shipping an MDM laptop to a employee, that makes it harder, not impossible, but harder to do that. I know they've
Yeah.
tried faking that as well, that they will get the laptop and integrate it in those farms. And then they're trying to fake like where that laptop is located. Like, oh yeah, we're totally in whatever. We're in Phoenix. Yeah, all right. And in
But it
reality,
makes it a
they're like in
lot
South
makes it a
Korea or
lot
somewhere.
harder.
Yes.
I
My
mean,
work.
even in many companies, even contractors have to use company issued
Yeah,
computers.
but it's
So
mostly
if
these still mostly bigger companies. Smaller companies or smaller
Yeah.
mid-sized, even a lot of them don't. Even though
Right.
it's because they don't have the knowledge and they don't know that they are missing this part. They think they don't need it or it's too expensive or too hard to do. And in reality, there's very easy solutions these days. I mean, sometimes
Yeah.
even the vendors like Apple are providing the tools for you these days.
Yeah, they are, because my work MacBook arrived, and it was a 2 grand brick for a week because it was provisioned to the wrong customer. Wasn't provisioned to us, it was written to another company. And I
But
had to wait while
the
our IT department rang up the company provisioned the laptop, say, no, re-register that MAC address to us and this vendor, and then sure enough, I could then actually log into it and set my profile up and everything. Yeah. Otherwise, brick.
Yeah, that makes it, but it also makes it harder because, and the reason is not the MDM. I mean, yeah, that does maybe also add something because certain resources are probably locked to that MDM device. But the part that makes it harder is then you can't just use any random laptop, right? You can't just use the laptop you already have in your farm. Right. You have to use the one that was provided.
So yeah.
Not impossible.
It makes the job more difficult.
Yeah, not impossible. I mean, you can, if you have, and apparently they had farms in the US, for example, then of course you just ship it to that and plug it in and you're still okay. But the delays and whatever that you have there, that's the other part.
Makes it a lot 29 harder.
29 suspected farms across 16 states, 29 financial accounts, 21 fake websites supporting the IT workers, and 200 computers involved.
Yeah.
It's a big operation. It's not a couple of blokes that
it's organized.
It's organized and massive operation.
Yeah.
This was quite surprising.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I said, I mean, but really, like, what are the other things they can do? I mean, even a face-to-face interview is not, I mean, face-to-face as in meet somewhere, like meet space. Even that is not a guarantee because they could just send like they hired for like a couple hours to basically do the interview.
So hire an actor.
Well,
actor that fits the description of you as an employee.
Yeah, exactly. So true.
With correct ID details, rocks up. Yeah, that's me. Yeah.
I mean, I think the best thing you can do is lots of little things that would make it harder and harder for them to work around. So
yeah, and then they're like they will
shipping
probably,
a company issued laptop, having a stand-up meeting on Zoom where you have to turn your video on every day.
Yeah.
I get that. I've enough to people actually do. Real that do that. That's bad enough.
Yeah. I mean, as you said, it's a lot of little things. Like, I mean, one problem that people will face is delays because, like, if you're sitting in, I don't know, North Korea and the laptop you're using is in the US, there's latency. And that's something you can probably detect. And on an MDM device, there's usually also more controls and more locks and whatever that you get.
More hardware controls. So I can't put my own dodgy VPN on it and my KVM management tools, particularly those kind of things that are strictly verboten from my work laptop. You know, keyloggers and...
Yeah. I mean, is it impossible? Probably
other
not.
Than the IT department's ones,
I can barely change the color of my background in my Windows machine at work.
It's all pink. No, but I mean, is it impossible? I mean, with enough energy and backdoors or whatever, even that can be circumvented. Like that you circumvent the MDM and it basically pretends everything is fine and everything is working exactly how it should be, and in reality, it's like completely like circumvented. Yeah, it could happen, but I think that is a level where then it gets like I'm not sure it's worth it.
Well, I wonder if you know, doing all those things plus just training managers to look for certain characteristics.
Yes, look for clues.
Yeah, it must
look
possible.
For clues.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is damn hard. Like I mean, we've had that once happen like many years ago, where one person interviewed and a different person showed up. We're like,
really?
Is that the same person that we interview? Yeah, we had that happen. Like once.
I don't know if we have, I mean, I've not anything that I've heard of. We're recruiting for some at the moment, and as far as I can tell, no one's a Korean bot farmer.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll find out.
But in this case, I mean, this was still like in the late tens, like 2018, I think. And like, I mean, we interviewed and
so what,
really good, really good tech person and whatever. And we're like, great senior developer, whatever, going to hire him, sign the contract, whatever. And then a person shows up and they had no clue what they were doing.
So
and
was
the,
so was the scam that they just got somebody really smart to do the interview to get the job?
Yeah. And we honestly still don't know what the point was, because like if they had been somewhat, I mean,
confident,
as I said, they looked they look different. But if they, like, you know, sometimes your memory isn't 100%, and we're like, okay, maybe that's fine. They signed a contract, they're there, whatever, maybe. If that's been somewhat competent, maybe that could have worked. But they were so useless that we were like, yeah, no, something is fishy. And then we checked, and we had some locks and whatever, and we're like, yeah, that doesn't track. And then
probably the same people that hired people to take their college entrance exam.
Yeah. Probably something like that.
Like you said, the driving tests and things like that.
What were they thinking, right? I'm going to have somebody get an interview so I get a job, but I'm totally incompetent. How long is that going to last?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I mean, they were gone within, I think, a couple of days. They didn't even get the paycheck for that time, basically. Yeah, it was just so obvious right away. We're like, yeah, okay, that's something's wrong. So it took us a couple of days to really work it out, but then we're like, yeah.
So I guess we've learned fraudsters have gotten much smarter.
Yeah, I mean, the tech is getting better, the tools are getting better, AI is getting better. I mean, all the comps, I mean, we're literally sitting in a call right now that is going halfway across the world, right? And it's life, and it's life. And we see each other, like, perfect.
It's also the work from home thing. You know, our company, we had offices all over the world, but they were pretty strict about, even if there were only five people in a city or in a region, we would put an office together.
Yeah. Yeah, but usually now, you would even hire that way, home. Right? You would be like, okay, we have no office in this location, and unless you
gotta
acquire
move.
Something, whatever, there's no office here. You got to move. With probably some exceptions. I mean, exceptions have always existed, so it's not... Work from home has been a thing for a long time. Like, it's not,
for
it's not an internet
people,
age
it's been
thing.
A thing for a long time, yeah.
I mean, my wife's company, she's been working from home now for 10 years.
That's what I mean. I know some cases, even at Apple in the 90s and even in the 80s, where people at Apple worked from home. Like, very, very aware of circumstances. But
It was definitely happening in the 80s, but it was only for the exceptional people.
For
whatever reason, they were exceptional.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's not that it didn't happen, but of course, these days it's more prevalent. It's more, tech is.
Yeah, they reduced all the locations where the employees were. And they said, that's fine, you can work from home. We'll give you all the kit you need.
Yeah.
And it's never not worked for them. It's been my wife was looking around when COVID hit, and a lot of companies were going remote and go, what's new? Been doing this for years.
Same for us. I mean, more management apparently didn't get the memo, but for us it didn't matter. Like, we literally worked the next day the same we had worked the previous day.
I logged in over here. I logged in here, and I pretty much haven't left in terms of a working space.
Yeah.
Exactly. Brief times they tried to get us back into the office, and I pointed out if there was a reason why I drove 30 miles for anything other than presenteeism, I couldn't see a point in me turning up because I was doing the work. There was evidence of that by the amount of work that was done.
Yeah.
Same. And they kind of went, all right, Ian. So now, if you've got a group of people in a room and you want me there, fantastic, I'll come.
Yeah.
If all it's because is you want me in an office to say I'm in an office, no, you can piss off. I'm
going to have to
keep
a
seat warm.
Yeah.
Okay, keep a seat warm. Yeah, exactly. No, it's not happening.
Suck up some oxygen from the air. Yeah. No point.
Waste some fuel and some of my time getting there. No, not happening.
But you know what's not a waste of anything? And that is Tom's story. We have some 3D printing going on.
So this kind of relates to our pre-show discussion about flying. I guess I think that's why I chose this one. But the story is about a Chinese company who used 3D to help. It's not completely created by 3D printing, but to help create a micro turbojet engine. And for me, the cool part of this story isn't so much the 3D printing, because it's not clear exactly which parts were 3D printed. I'm sure it's kind of the cowling and the more of the structure. I'm sure the insides with the turbo blades and things are probably not 3D printed, maybe. But I think the cool thing is they have this tiny little jet engine.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
You know, I was thinking, how about a drone instead of, you know, kind of a helicopter drone with props on it? What if you attach little microjets? And this thing, it said it produces 160 kilograms of thrust. They claim that they tested it up to 13,000 feet. So it's at about 500, 5,000 meters, something like that, or less than that,
Yeah, something like that.
3,000, 4,000
Yeah.
meters. You know, that's pretty good height.
That is for, I mean, that's
And
basically the height that general aviation would fly in most of the times. Like, you can go higher with some like very high-end planes, but most planes will not even go that high. Especially,
no,
I don't think the 152 will make it that high, usually.
That was kind of the upper limit of our skydiving, because
Yeah.
you know, much higher than that you need oxygen,
Well, that too.
but
Yeah, over
or if you
10,000
have
000 is.
people on it. But I was just thinking about what kind of drone technology could you build if you had these micro jet engines with that much thrust? And is it just me? Is this not new? I don't think I've ever seen any kind of drone technology, sort of at the consumer level anyway, that has, you know, small little drones that is propelled with a jet engine.
I mean,
Well,
there's
you got.
in
Oh,
the
go ahead.
model plane space, there's definitely a jet engines and stuff. So,
Are
yeah.
there?
Yeah,
People flying those.
for sure.
And then
Like
and
little
then.
jet engines. Like, I mean, they built like A380s or fighter jets or whatever, and there's little jet engines in those.
And there's that link I've dropped in the chat for these ones, which is a biplane with a couple of little jet engines on its side. He means I was happened to be in Armed Forces Day a few weeks ago, and we were at the seaside, and they have like a show. They bring planes in. And one of the guys who came was this guy, and honestly, the ridiculous things it can do because of the jet. You know, the classic sort of thing where they'll go vertically and then kind of fall back down when you're looking at normal sort of aerobatic displays. He goes up and goes up and goes up with a jet. It just hangs there, defying gravity almost. And then eventually goes, "Hey, I'm bored of this now." And he goes, "Yeah," and zooms back down. It's completely ridiculous. Again, that's using a tiny little turboprop to make it happen, but it is
So
utterly cracker. So
I guess
creation
what I'm
makes
looking
conscious.
for, I've never bought a
Decoration.
drone, but if they make a drone, I guess you could create kind of a VTOL, a vertical takeoff and landing, where you use the
Oh,
props
yeah.
to take off and land, and then you engage the jets for propulsion. That's the drone I want. When is DJI going to make that kind of drone?
That would be nice.
Yeah, I have a link for you that I'm about to throw in the chat. I actually posted there too much.
Well, and I guess the thing
Yes.
with 3D printing just makes it much easier to make it, you know, from a design
Oh
point of
yeah.
view,
I mean,
you know,
that's the
or
thing, isn't it?
manufacturing.
3D printing opens up a whole world of testing and stuff and prototyping you've never been able to do before. You think it, you can make it kind of thing if you've got the right gear. I mean, mind you, you've got to get closer to the pro level of the printing things than me with an Ender 3 in my shed. You know, it's not quite the
Yeah,
same.
I mean, also, do you want to risk your life by something that's poorly printed? That is
Well,
very true.
maybe what you could do is buy a standard DJI drone, get the you know, the CAD files for the 3D printing of this jet engine, and DIY a jet engine powered DJI helicopter.
There you go,
Yeah,
I found it.
I
Jet
put a
powered
link in the
drone.
chat to a video. It's like a little jet engine that you can build yourself. It's like apparently about like 150 grand or something. It's literally a jet engine and a seat.
Madness, proper madness. And I found, well, I was equally previously Googling for something similar. Tom, you can have your own jet quad, a
Jet
jet
quad.
powered Verkoff and takeoff and landing drone. Yours
That's
for a
what I need.
mere $70,000.
That's actually not so bad I mean, that looks pretty solid, to be honest.
Just doesn't it? It's proper bit of engineering, is that?
Maybe the over engineered
That's
even
pretty big,
crazy.
though. It
Yeah.
does look pretty big.
I don't
How
want
much
something to
fuel does
ride
it
in. I just want a
take is the
drone.
question.
Yeah, right.
It's not that big when you see the pictures.
Yeah, but it's like how much, I mean, it's using Jet A, diesel, kerosene. Probably a
Well,
lot of it.
using avgas, I guess.
Well, that's a problem.
No, they didn't
Even
mention
with
avgas, so I guess that
well,
went.
even with you know, think about the original Harriers and things. Those things, you know, didn't have much range if you know, engage the vertical
Yeah.
I mean,
And I
that
mean,
takes a lot of thrust. It takes a
yeah.
lot of thrust to keep, you know, if you're going to use the engines for lift.
Couple tons in the air basically have like floats.
Yeah, that's why
Tons
you
of
have
heavy
wings,
fuel.
right?
Yeah.
Wings are more efficient than engines
Exactly. Even a
for
helicopter is literally just a wing. Like,
that.
yeah.
Right.
No,
Yeah, you don't think of it like that, but it is, isn't it? Yeah.
it's just a wing that is rotating. No, but it's like I mean, jet engines are not necessarily known for being fuel efficient.
Right,
They're
none of
just
them, yeah.
fuel efficient at what you want. Like a big for a big airplane, it's efficient because it produces a lot of thrust, so you can push a lot of weight pretty quickly, like down a
Right.
runway and around the world. So that makes sense.
At a certain
But
speed, you want to
yes.
achieve a certain speed too,
Exactly, and you want to go get there fast, but it's not very it doesn't it's using a ton of fuel doing so. The
Absolutely.
little engine we have, it runs on just standard like gas for your cars. It's Super 98, I think we're using. And so makes probably more sense for Ian than for Tom, but it is.
Yeah.
But yes, it's just regular
Yeah, there's the stuff I
unleaded
put in the back of my
gas.
car, yeah.
Yes.
Well, it's high
It's about
octane, 98's
20,
pretty high.
yeah, it's about 21 liters for about an hour of flight, roughly.
It's all right, really, when you think about it.
Yeah, it's not so bad. An hour it gets,
No.
and it goes, I mean, it goes pretty fast. So an hour is strong,
Right.
is a lot. Like, it's not, it's, but the reason for it is, I mean, what does the engine have to do? It has to get the plane up to speed so the aerodynamics kick in and it flies.
Yeah, it's going to
And
push it off
then
the ground again past the moving set.
push it forward, but usually you can even like once you're up at whatever altitude you want to fly at, it basically you just keep it going at that speed and then it flies at that like altitude, and that's it.
I suppose it's the same with a jumbo jet in a way. It's once you've broken free of gravity and you've got it up, you've got the
Well,
aerodynamics to do the work
you
for
never
you.
break free of gravity. You just
Well, I say break free of gravity, but you've got it off the ground. You've got
Yes.
it off the ground as
Once
much as you can.
the aerodynamics counteract gravity. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I was reading about Concorde recently, and that plane was really a really, really big delta-winged fuel tank. The wings, the entire chassis, they're similar with the Vulcan, the bomber. Those delta wing planes, they were pretty much a fuel tank with a couple of engines strapped to it and a
Yeah,
tiny
that's
bit
what
to
the
stick
B-1
people in.
bomber is,
Yeah.
yeah.
But I mean,
And a tiny bit to stick people in.
to be fair, basically every bigger commercial airplane is like that. Like the A380 is maybe, I mean, the wings are pretty big as well. But yeah, I
Yeah,
mean, the
they're
wings
fuel
are mostly
tanks.
fuel tanks, and then you have the tube in the middle. Yeah. So,
Well,
yeah.
the other, I guess we don't need to get through all the aerodynautical things
No.
here, but the other thing
We're
is,
getting it wrong anyway, probably.
the amount of lift that you get at 30,000 feet is different than you get at 10,000 feet.
Yes. That's usually part of the limit of planes. Like at some
All
point
right.
the air is too thin to actually support the plane still.
That's why
And
taking
the
off at
engine
an
and the
air.
well, and mostly it's because the engine loses steam at some point.
But that's why taking off in little planes from airports that are at 8,000 feet elevation is always a bit tricky.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Thin air already. And you need a certain speed. Anyway, let's talk about something else.
Okay.
I'll throw in mine, and it has nothing to do with flying, despite that we have now for the second time talked about
Thank you about
flying.
flying.
It's actually a new chat app that a certain person named Jack Dorsey has released. The app is called BitChat. It's an open source app, so that's good. Jack Dorsey, for those who don't know who he is, he's the CEO of Block, which I think is what was their name before? They changed their name to Block.
Oh, yeah, we covered it, didn't we? And I can't
Yeah,
remember
long
all.
time ago.
It was God, I can't remember. Oh, that's funny. I can't remember the name of
Google
that.
for the win. Let's see.
What was it? Square. Square.
Square.
Yes, Square. The company Square has these days as Block. And Twitter co-founder, of course, I think most famously, we know him as that. Right. Yeah, so he launched a new open source app called BitChat, promising to deliver secure and private messaging without a centralized infrastructure. So in contrast to most other systems out there, WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger, Signal, even whatever, it doesn't have centralized infrastructure. It relies on Bluetooth and end-to-end encryption. So it's basically peer-to-peer communication. So you're sending it over Bluetooth to other people. Kind of that. That's the idea.
So that's the part I don't understand. Mm-hmm. How do you send... So you can only send chats to people that are within 30 feet of you?
No, you can relay it. It's basically, it's like a mesh network. If you have enough people in whatever area right. you're in, or because it's just Bluetooth connections, yeah,
so it's there's find my...
Yeah, it's exactly. It's kind of like that. So the idea is, I mean, it is supposed to be for environments, and it can honestly be everywhere in the world these days, where internet and whatever chat messages are monitored and are inaccessible,
sure.
for example. Also, yeah, maybe in environments where you don't have internet connection, you just have Bluetooth, but there's people around that can relay information, basically. Dorsey also published a white paper detailing the protocol and the privacy mechanisms and the system design that, in quotes, prioritizes security. However, there is a slight problem with what he's so far done, or what's been published so far. The security researchers, of course, are very interested in that. Like, I mean, every secure app out there is something of interest for security researchers, because they want to see, is it really secure? What are they doing? How are they protecting things? What are the security flaws maybe that needed to be fixed or whatever, or found. So they have looked at the app and the code, and they basically figured out that neither the app nor the code have been at all tested or reviewed for security. So they published an app for people to use that has gone through and by Dorsey's own admission, according to this article, zero check so far. It's like, yes, for a secure chat app, private.
That's not very good idea.
Yes, apparently secure by design.
I love this quote from the guy.
Get tested.
The guy that found the problem. Security is a great feature to have for going viral, but basically a sanity check, like, do the identity keys actually do any cryptography, would be very obvious things to test.
Yeah, they have added a warning now, and I mean, to be fair, it depends on what you do. If Dorsey had been upfront and said, okay, we're like releasing this open source app, it's kind of the first alpha version. There's still a lot of work to be done and security to be checked.
Sure.
Here's the white paper. What we want to do or how this works. And we're actually inviting security researchers now to look at it. Okay.
Yeah.
Fine.
And let us know what you think. Go at it.
Okay. Fine. Because it's not ready for prime time. Fine. I mean, you have to start somewhere. I mean, even then, I would have hoped that some person somewhere did like a quick check before publishing it, and two developers wrote it and didn't even think about security. I don't know if that's what happened, but that's what it sounds like a little bit. But yeah, they've now posted warnings on the GitHub page, basically saying this, or verbatim, this software has not received external security review and may contain vulnerabilities and does not necessarily meet its stated security goals. Do not use it for production use and do not rely on its security whatsoever until it has been reviewed. Okay, at least now there's a warning.
They should have had that warning on day one. I mean,
yes.
I mean, So what causes people to do things like this? Is it hubris, or is it more like, this is just a thing I'm putting out there. I didn't really intend for people to use it for real work yet, and they just didn't say that. I mean, it's so unbelievable that if you had an idea that you want a consumer or create a consumer piece of software, or a piece of consumer software, that you would basically do no testing.
Yeah, that is a good question. As I said, if it was like two like random people working on a project, I would be like, yeah, okay, fine. Like they want to try it, or it's a work in progress, fine. But there's a big name behind it, Jack Dorsey, and this is not the first company he's built. This is not the first app he's built. Like, he knows better.
Right.
And with his name attached and the way he announced it, it feels like, I don't know what the purpose is. Getting it out there, but
right. You're Jack Dorsey. You don't need to do that.
Yeah, I mean, at least whatever. Give it to one researcher before and say, okay, can you have a look and make sure there's no obvious shit in it.
Right.
Like, you can do that even in secret and be like, hey, like we're about to release this open source. Can you have a quick look? I mean, he probably knows the people who would do that, and he can spend the whatever $10,000 to do that. It's probably not a complicated app. Like,
really, it really makes him look bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh yeah.
Article
he's done
has
a lot of things to make him look bad. This is just another one.
The article has some details if you're interested. What was found? For example, they found broken identity verification, where basically an attacker could intercept the identity key and peer ID pair that is supposed to at least establish a trusted connection. You could also impersonate people in people's address books. I mean, pretty typical things for a very early version. Like that part doesn't surprise me. I mean, it's like it is so hard to build good and secure apps, and it takes time. It's not something that you will manage day one.
Well, it's like that. It's like, you know, the basic software development process is you develop some code, you do internal testing, you give it to some external people, and then you release it for production.
Yeah.
They just skip all that part.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, a lot of companies do that.
I know, but it's right. I think it's crazy. Yeah. Like you said, in the right context, it would be fine.
Mm-hmm.
If you set up the contacts and set expectations, it would be totally fine.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm sure.
Anyway. Yeah, but other than that, I mean, bad start, but interesting tech, I have to say. Bluetooth is everywhere. It's pretty hard to, you can't disable Bluetooth. I mean, actually, it's not true. Governments do, or like in secure areas, Bluetooth is often disabled in phones. Like, if you have a secure phone, often it doesn't have Bluetooth.
But any radio signal can be jammed too.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. But, for sure. But jamming Bluetooth is pretty difficult because so much of the world and like technology relies on Bluetooth, right? Like, you can't use wireless headphones. You can't use IoT devices. There's so many devices. Like, I don't know, my blood pressure monitor uses like Bluetooth.
Sure, everything.
Like, there's everything in the world.
But do you really think a consumer messaging app that relies on peer-to-peer Bluetooth connections? I mean, how many times do you send a message where you're not near anybody else's Bluetooth? I do it all the
Actually,
time.
No, I think these days you're hard pressed to not be around any Bluetooth device.
I do it every day in my house.
Yeah, but within 30 feet, there is at least some other person, and within that is probably another person. Like, I wouldn't be so sure.
And
the question is also the delivery time. Like, does it have to be real time?
Right.
Like, I mean, if you basically, your phone stores the message, and whenever you're in range of another person, it relays it, then okay. Also fine. Depends on what you use it for. I mean, if you use it like email, for example, gets delivered eventually.
Yeah, I mean, I can think for certain niche markets where security is incredibly important,
and I think that's
and
what
all
it's
that,
for.
And people that understand
that's what
a peer-to-peer
it's for.
Bluetooth network. Yeah, I think for that it would be fine. It's never going to be the general consumer.
I mean, I would say it's not impossible, but it's also not very likely.
You lived in America.
Yeah, it's also not very likely.
You lived in America.
No, I lived
in
Germany.
There are a lot of, well, there's a lot of people in America who spend the whole day not within 30 feet of another Bluetooth.
Oh, that's true. I was more thinking, I also like have lived in Germany where people don't trust any technology and probably disable Bluetooth all the time.
There is that as well. Yeah. There is completely
so,
that as
so,
well.
No, but I mean, I would say it is not impossible that eventually this could be a big thing, but it's also not very likely.
Right.
I mean, crazier things have happened, and if all of a sudden, I don't know, the internet broke down and this was the only way to communicate, then I mean, it would be pretty popular, I think. I mean, but how likely is that?
It definitely has good use cases, yeah. You know.
I mean, I can think about things. I mean, it's like, for example, you're in a, I mean, we have that all the time right now. We have like in a flood area, for example, like very,
right.
Like, up-to-date topic, like Texas and
everything. Right.
Or like there was an earthquake or whatever, some like disaster of some sort, and there is no internet. But there, you still have Bluetooth, and if there's enough people in the area that you, then you can still send messages to each other, to others outside eventually. Like
right,
if it reaches a point where there is internet, then it could be relayed back, for example. So there's ways
so if
that
we
could
set
be
up,
helpful.
We could just set up ham radio stations every 200 feet
mm-hmm.
that had Bluetooth connections.
They just relay it. Yeah, for example.
Right.
No, that's the point. There is things where this could be helpful even in areas where it usually wouldn't be. Question is then, do you have the app when you need it? How do you get the
yeah,
app if
I
you
mean,
haven't
like
downloaded
you said,
it?
Well, it's not that unusual to have an app that you only have for emergencies.
Yeah, but how many people do that? Like that's
no,
the question.
Yeah, not many.
Is there
not
enough that you? But
it's
that even
the
if,
old days
even
the
if
mobile for emergencies.
Yeah, but even if it's like you and your couple friends and they live within reasonable ranges
yeah.
that you can relay whatever to your neighbor's house or whatever. Yeah, okay. Bluetooth goes pretty far these days. Like it's not,
and it's totally peer to peer. No, none
yeah,
of the big companies know
anything.
You're doing it.
Well,
your
that,
ISP
yeah.
doesn't. Your ISP
yeah.
doesn't even know about
it's
it.
Kind of like the walkie-talkies back in the day, right? As kids.
Yeah, right?
Like,
right.
Kind of
oh,
like
yeah.
that. Yeah, you don't need.
Okay,
you
talk
don't need
me into
plan.
It. I'm gonna download this.
You're
gonna
download it. Okay, but don't use it for anything productive, right? Not yet, at least. As I said, give it time. I mean, I don't know if this goes anywhere, but it's open source, so I don't think there's a big business plan behind it. It's more a should exist in the world type of thing. Yeah, said. That will be interesting. Good. I think that's it for our stories for today, right? So anyway, good in
yeah.
time. Then we should really quickly thank our sponsor, alltechnologies.co.uk. Ian might know something about them because it's our friend Ewan.
It's Ewan's monitoring business. They
mm-hmm.
have cameras that they mount on various places, particularly, I mean, they've been
mostly construction
sites,
construction sites in general, yes.
In general, a monitoring, so it gives you time mm-hmm. of motion data, it gives you kind of environmental data. It's quite clever stuff. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I've seen the boxes and stuff when I met up with him last time, and they are incredibly useful, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know much more beyond that, other than that they've had some good success, you know.
Yeah, no, they're really good. I mean, you can, as you said, like motion data, videos, you can like to optimize your processes, to monitor health hazards, like dust levels, vibration, like all sound levels,
yeah,
all
yeah.
of that. Sometimes you have to do, you're required to do environmental like monitoring as well for whatever
mm.
reason. Like especially rail projects apparently have that, but any construction
yeah.
site can really have, could really use that. So, and it's a really cool technology. Is the little sentry boxes have won some awards. Like they're really good. And I know a little bit about the tech behind it. So a really good company, good people behind it, like Ewan and Anders and a couple more.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, so if you are interested in that, no matter where you are, I mean, Ewan even said, hey, there's some projects in Thailand or whatever, like if they fly me out, I'll do it.
Yeah.
So anywhere in the world, if there is someone who's like, hey, that sounds like a really cool idea, head over to awetechnologies.co.uk, awetechnologies.co.uk. And yeah, reach out to Ewan, and I'm pretty sure he will be more than happy to help
oh,
you out.
Yes.
Yeah, and thanks, of course, Ewan and the crew for supporting British Tech Network. So thanks. We have a chat, by the way. Just want to mention that. BritishTechNetwork.com/chat is where you can find the transcript if you're listening to this later. But if you're, well, right now it's probably almost too late, but next time maybe when you want to join the live stream, live.britishtechnetwork.com is where we stream that. You just go there, video on the left, chat on the right. You've seen it. And start typing. It generates really fun names. I would have to see what we got today. For example, what did I get? Silly Rush. I think we got Silly Rush, and of course, our all-time favorite Brave Ramen.
Wrong.
I don't know. It shows up all the time.
Is my favorite.
Yeah, if you wanna change your name up top, there's a purple button. Hit it, change name, change your name. It sticks. Yeah, that's how easy it is. So thanks. And I think then it's time for the cool things. Who wants to start us off? That is Tom.
Okay, my cool thing is an episode of Asianometry. I think I've picked Asianometry before as a cool thing. This is a
Doesn't
guy,
ring a
John,
bell,
that.
so maybe not. Tell us more.
Asianometry is this guy that John from, I think he lives in Taiwan now. And he does like 15, 30-minute videos on different subjects, mostly tech, and he does a lot of semiconductor stuff. That's how I got to know him. But he also just does general things, the history of stuff primarily. And he does good research, he does a good presentation. Anyway, when he covers a subject, he does a good job. And I know that from the semiconductor subjects he's tackled, he's very accurate. And this episode is called Pumped Hydroelectricity Storage. And it's the idea of using water to store energy. You know, like you collect solar power during the day, you pump water up a hill. At night, when solar panels aren't collecting any energy, you have the water run down the hill and turn turbines. And I've always been fascinated by that and wondering, you know, how practical it is, how many of these have been built, because the scale in terms of physically what you need to build for water storage seems kind of insane. So this is a great video that explains the basic concepts, places where it's been used for many, many years, storing energy in big water reservoirs. So it's a cool episode.
That is interesting. I mean, yeah, water energy storage is probably very old. I mean, probably as old as the wheel
It
almost.
is. It is. So if you watch this video, you'll get some examples from, I think it's like at least 100 years ago.
No, I'm actually thinking multiple thousand years. Because it's like, I mean, the old school, like the mills that were built like on waterways. I mean, that was kind of like that. They would use water as energy source or as any store. And if you had like a little lake that you artificially created, that would store energy, right? And then when you needed it, you just open it up and use that. So I think it probably goes back pretty far what we could use.
Sure, hydropower goes back a long way for things like that. I'm thinking more about the storage
Of
element
like
where,
power, really, like
The power
you
itself.
pump the water
Electric
up a
power.
hill and then you let it flow down the hill. That's only about 100 years old. Anyway, it's a cool video.
Austria is pretty big in that because we have so many mountains and lakes and mountains. We buy energy, especially when it's cheap. Like sometimes even countries pay us to take the energy if they have surplus, especially these days with renewable energies. That
And
happens
they just
sometimes
store it.
where they have negative pricing basically because they have so much energy they don't know where to do it, what to do with it. So we basically buy it, store it in mostly water, like we pump up water to hill the, up in the mountains in those lakes, and then once the energy is needed again, we release it.
I'm looking on the in the comments, and apparently we've got four in the UK. Wales, which makes sense, and
Yeah, makes
Scotland.
sense. Yeah, of course.
By the
Mountains.
Scotland, where we got high mountains. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, in theory,
Yeah,
you
he
could do it
got.
other places as well, but it's simply easier and more effective if you do it in mountains.
He, as I remember, it's been a week or two since I watched this episode, but he gives some graphs over worldwide how many of these systems have been built over the years, and he talks about some cycles and what we're driving, you know, cycles of building and what we're driving. The other thing is Asianometry is now part of Stratechery, Ben Thompson's company, if you
Nice.
know them.
Okay, that's cool.
He acquired John in Asianometry a couple months back.
That is pretty cool. Yeah, I have to watch that. It's probably going to be interesting. You also have an interesting thing, Ian.
Not very interesting. It's just a set of Bluetooth headphones. It's a case of that thing of realizing that some set of my desktop tech has gone dead and I need some other ones. And the joys of Prime at the moment, it's a Prime Day deal. It's not super cheap, but £19 for a Bluetooth set of headphones. What amazes me now, I must admit, is the quality of something you can buy so cheaply. I've got two pairs of much better Sony ones that I use for travel quite a bit, and I listen to stuff in the house with that are very nice. Noise cancelling, everything else. And I set these up when they came in, and for what they are, they're excellent in terms of, and they'll be absolutely fine for my day-to-day use of a set of headphones. 70 hours, it's going to last all day. Comfortable enough as well. I mean, they're not too hideous to wear. I mean, it's all good. I mean, now we bring them to the camera, they fold up reasonably well. It's all good as far as a set of cheap cans go. It's all good.
Yeah, no, those, I mean, it's like it's one of those brands that very few people talk about, but the Anker Soundcore stuff is really good.
Soundcore,
Yeah,
yeah, I agree.
I've given away a couple of Bluetooth speakers as gifts to friends, because they wanted one, and they didn't care too much about the price, to be honest. They were like, oh, I just need something that I can put in my car or whatever. And I'm like, hey, like that works. They're really good. And they last forever. So I mean,
Yeah,
for like
I'm
20
a big
bucks or
fan of
whatever.
Anker.
Yeah. Like Anker in general, but
I'm a big
the
fan.
Soundcore. I mean, Soundcore is, I think, a company Anker acquired, remember correctly?
Yeah.
Okay. They've
I
got
think
some of those
so.
head. I was tempted to try a set of those headphones that you can clip onto your ear. You know, the sort that they're basically a U shape and it clicks over the. But I figured it for long term, they'd probably be uncomfortable sat there all day in them. So I decided I just wouldn't
Depends.
risk it.
Depends.
I wouldn't risk it.
It was Beats though, but I had some and I was wearing them all day and they were fine. It just depends on how good they fit to your specific ears.
Yeah. No, it's just a bit easier for my day
Yeah,
to
but
day, but I'm
18
getting calls
bucks,
and
like, I
stuff.
mean, that is
Yeah,
insane.
it's dirt
that's
cheap.
crazy.
And they have a nice kind of brownish color.
You get two different colours. There's a white one, and there's some sort of fake bronze colour.
I don't like that. Black
Yeah.
and white are too boring.
Nah,
I want more
it
colors. Yeah. My thing has also colors. Also
Oh,
some
okay, brilliant.
browns and some silvers. Mine is actually a grinder. Like we're going completely other direction of tech. So
Oh, bean grinder. All
bean
right.
co coffee grinder, yes. So, backstory. I twice already, and now the third, basically, I've bought a grinder. I bought twice. Well, actually, no, the fourth. This is not. I bought twice, like once in, I'm gonna say 15, 16. One from this company, Comar. I think it's an American company, if I remember correctly.
It's
It might
Italian by
be.
the
No,
looks
it's
of things.
Italian. It's actually. Yeah, never mind. It's Italian, right? And then I sold it when I moved to the U.S. And then I bought another one in the same exact same one in the U.S. But it just didn't. I talked to them and they were really nice. And I talked to them whether it could be like the motor could be replaced or whatever. And they said, yeah, I mean, in theory, it's possible, but it's just not worth it. It's just way too expensive to do that. Like ship it in, send it in, and they have to take it out and replace it. And it's just like, yeah, just sell it and buy a new one. And that's what I did. And then I bought one in the U.S. And then I moved back from the U.S. to Austria. And I'm like, okay, I shouldn't have sold it. And I sold that again in the US, and then I bought a different one from a different Italian company, Eureka. Good grinder, way too slow, and really annoyed me. And it was like 5 years ago. It really annoyed me over time because it was super slow, it was finicky, and the fork for the Porter filter was kind of smallish. And I've been thinking about it for months, and last week I decided, okay, I'm done with this. So I wanted to buy exactly the same grinder I had bought already twice because I know it works. It is a little bit, not gonna lie, it's a little bit overkill for what I need at home. But it's just fun to use, and it's okay. And it's like 800 bucks or something. So I'm like, yeah, it's not that critical. So I went to a store. And the one that I wanted, they didn't have, but they could have ordered. But he was like, but I have the TP version in the window. And I was like, yeah, I've been looking at that anyway. And it's like the TP version, so it's the Guamar M80, that's the series. And then I had the E originally. You've seen that in a bunch of like smaller cafes, especially. The bigger ones have usually other brands or bigger versions of the ones. But the smaller cafes sometimes have those M80s, MADEs. But I was like, I'd been looking at the TP, the touchscreen version. I was like, yeah, I mean, I was kind of interested. I was kind of curious if what's different or better about it. And he was like, yeah, he was really knowledgeable and explained it to me. And I'm like, and he has it here. And he's like, I mean, it's been sitting there. It's never been used. I'll give you like an 80 buck discount. I'm like,
Oh.
sold. And he delivered it
Yeah.
with his cargo bike
Nice.
in Vienna on a Saturday morning before he opened the shop. So it was
So,
really
how
nice.
much did it cost?
About 800 bucks. Seven, okay, 720, 720 now.
$800 for a coffee
Euros to
grinder?
grind
Yes.
your coffee.
Yeah. But that's nothing. I mean, you can go like 1500, 2000, two and a half if you go really, really. I mean,
I'm sorry. Eight
yes.
hundred
Yeah,
dollars for a coffee grinder.
I'm with
Easy.
Tom at the moment. I'm
Yes.
with Tom at the moment. You
No.
could tell that was expensive gear, but I was
No.
thinking, oh,
No.
400, £500?
You don't want
No.
to know what my coffee machine cost.
Oh, the
About
Gaggia stuff you
three,
think.
three and a half. So
You need to open up a coffee bar.
no, I could. I no, actually, no.
Yeah.
Probably not with this machine. With the grinder, I probably could. Not small one at least, but not with this machine. No, but I mean, they also last. Like, I mean, they last like 10, 20 years easy. I sold the 5-year-old Eureka for about 50% the price. So 200 bucks. It was
Patrice,
400 at Waterstone.
I have a $20 coffee grinder I've had
Yes.
since the late 80s.
Yeah, there might be. But you cannot do what I'm doing with it. I can guarantee you that.
Okay.
If you want, if you like, you do need a good quality grinder or something that doesn't like that gets it very consistently, because like for the machine I have and for the kind of, I mean, I make espresso, like I make cappuccinos, whatever.
Right.
You do need a better grinder. You can get away with like 100, 150 euro, and that's actually what I started with originally, like 15 years ago or something. I didn't buy it right away like that. But I said, like, I was like, fuck it, 800 bucks, whatever, 720. It's like, no, it is worth it. It is absolutely 100% worth it for me. Like, I just sometimes I have friends over, and then I'll make like multiple cappuccinos at once, and it's just so fast. And I mean, the thing about this one is it is so much easier. It does the same, no, it does a better job than the one I had in about a third of the time.
Okay.
It's like, I mean, a third of the time means it's like instead of 18, 19 seconds, it does it in five.
All that time you've saved, what are you going to do with those
Yes.
extra few
But
seconds?
if you do it, yeah. But I mean, to be fair, what
If
very
you do it a
often.
hundred times, you save almost a half hour.
Yeah,
No,
almost a
no.
half
But I
hour.
mean, to be honest, it does matter sometimes to me, because it's like I'm in between meetings, I'm rushing, and I just want to
Right.
make a quick cappuccino just in between.
Right.
And I'm like, and then it takes forever. Like, those 30, those 15, 20 seconds do make a
Yeah, I
difference
get
at some
it. I
point.
get it.
Yeah, as I said, it's a hobby. Like, I'm not gonna lie. I mean, I could have done this with like a 100 euro machine and a grinder. It would be fine. It's not
Well, but
functionally, I did not need it, but I
look at the
like
bright side. Look at the bright side. Now we have a title for the show.
it. What is that?
Well,
The
you paid how
$800
much?
coffee grinder.
The $800 coffee grinder.
You
Yeah.
paid how much?
No, but I mean, it has a really nice, really colorful touchscreen that works really well. I have all the controls I need. The hopper I got is about for 250 grams, which is perfect. I think the pictures on the website have the really big ones. You don't need that. I don't need a. I don't put like whatever, a kilo and a half or 2 kilos of coffee in that. That goes stale pretty quickly because it's
Right.
exposed to air. So like the little 250 gram is even big enough. Look, easy. So yeah, it's just fun. I just really like it. I
Yeah.
like the fork. It got the long fork, which actually costs usually extra, but it was basically included in the price. Yeah, I just really like it. I'm enjoying it. It's fast. Every time I use it now, I'm like, ah, oh, this is so much better. So
That's well, then you've justified it to yourself, and you can't
yeah,
justify it to
no,
us too. We're just going to see it going, how much?
No. And I mean, as, to be fair, to be fair, the justification for myself was I want this and it's worth the money because of that. It yep. was there okay, was no so there's no rational it. Reason really that you could apply to that. But it's so many things you can apply that to.
No, I yeah. I agree. And there's things I bought that I bought because it's just nicer. It's yes. better.
Yes.
I think we all do that.
Yeah. Exactly.
There are some things and, where you can yeah. kind of genuinely justify your mm-hmm. spending yeah. the better, the really better one to not yeah. buy five more rubbish ones. Either.
And they don't usually lose a lot of value. It's that I've sold because I know I've sold two of them already over the years. I sold them for a very, very good price still after using them for a couple of years. And so the resale, the secondary market is pretty strong for those because people want them and they sometimes don't want to pay full price. And they know that they're going to last forever because they're not super complicated machines.
Mm.
The touchscreen version now a little bit more, but they're not super complicated. They're built pretty strong. I mean, they're heavy. That is one of the big differences. I mean, that thing is little bits here and there of plastic and the rest is solid metal. They're heavy and they have to be heavy. They're not supposed to move around at all. Like they're like, what was it? 10 kilos, 13 kilos, something like that. They're heavy.
Wow.
And you pay for that. It's a solid block of metal. I mean, my espresso machine is the same thing. It is heavy.
The shipping cost must be astronomical.
In this case, it was zero.
All right.
got delivered
for free. Picked it up in store. Yeah.
No, it got delivered for free.
Oh, he brought it.
And the carbon footprint of that was even pretty low because it was a cargo bike.
Right.
Yeah, which in Vienna is not that unusual, to be honest. Yeah, anyway, that's my cool thing. So, highly recommended. Qamar, MADTP. I think that's the show for today. We have a show title, apparently. Tom has already picked one.
We do.
So then all that's left is I'm going to start with Ian this time. Thanks Ian for doing this again with us and being here again. Like, come back and tell the people where I can find you.
They can find me on LinkedIn. My name's Ian Grant. I work for Veeam. Otherwise, I'm sometimes in the chat room, which is our Slack room on Slack. Sometimes you find me there, and I will usually, given all things considered and all stuff and summer and everything else, be here on Thursdays to talk nonsense with you two, because it's great fun.
It is. That it is. And Tom, the man without the shirt, well, back in the picture, at least, back in the day in the picture, at least. Thanks for being here, sharing the cool picture. I have to say that's pretty cool. And tell people where they can find out more about you.
People can find me on Mastodon. I am tomf@sfba.social. Thanks, Patrice.
And jumping out of planes.
Not anymore.
Okay, not anymore.
I wish I was. It's probably safer. It was a lot of fun.
It's probably safer that way. Anyway, me, I'm every week here on the British Tech Network. Tomorrow on the Mac Show, and of course on the Big Show every week, except when I'm traveling. It can happen that I have to skip. Or I'm flying, also the other reason. Anyway, everything I'm doing on my website, thepatrice.com. And Jeff and I have a really cool podcast called Retro Rewatch, where we talk about retro TV shows that I love and Jeff has not seen before. We're basically at the final episode of season 2 of Stargate SG-1 right now. Should be published tomorrow. And then we have some cool, interesting extra episodes, or not extra, regular episodes, but different episodes planned. One of them is a different show that we watched the pilot of, and you will have to wait for that a couple weeks, and then you will get that. And I can tell you, you will be surprised what we watched and how much Jeff actually enjoyed it once he gave it a chance. So that's that. By the way, British Tech Network is also available on Mastodon at britishtech@techhangout.social, on Blue Sky at britishtechnetwork.com, which is our domain, And also an email if you want to send us a message there, britishtech@gmail.com. Ewan, he will send a message to you. And apparently he mentioned that last week, I think. Someone sent an email and said, let's see if someone responds. And he did. So that was funny. Anyway, yeah, with that, thank you so much. Thanks for listening and talk to you soon. Bye-bye.